The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. And here's round one to test their vocabulary. 2 marks if they get the meaning of the following words reasonably right. Beginning with Dillis Powell. I want to know, Dillis, what is rahat lakum?
It's Turkish delight.
Yes, it's a Turkish sweetmeat, normally Turkish delight. 2 marks. And Dennis Norton, what is a jobation?
It could be a corruption of a jaw bashing. It's a long, sort of dull dissertation.
Yes.
When we give you an answer which is wrong, we then get a jobation on the right answer.
From me?
Yes.
Yes, quite right. Absolutely right. It's a reprimand, lengthy and tedious and going on, as Dennis says, for a long time. And it can be, and he's quite right, it can be jawbation rather than jobation. And it probably comes from those rather intolerable characters, Job's comforters in the Book of Job, who pretended they were comforting, but always, in fact, made things worse than they were before. 2 marks. Nancy Spain, what is a Fleming?
A Fleming?
Hmm.
It's an Arctic rat.
It's a lemming.
It's an author.
Yes. A Fleming.
A Fleming?
It's a bond raiser.
Oh, it's somebody who comes from, you know, the Low Countries.
Yes, which particular one?
Holland. Well, Belgium.
Yes, all right, yes. Put them both together.
Well, in between, you know.
All right, yes. Well, exactly what it is. It's a native of Flanders. Frank Muir, what is hokey pokey?
Hokey pokey? It's a sort of hanky panky on ice.
You're dead right, but we may not know exactly what that means.
It's a kind of Victorian ice cream sold from a barrow by a gentleman called Antonio.
Yes.
Oliver Osbert Antonio. O.O. Antonio.
You're quite right, Frank. It's a cheap form of ice cream which used to be sold in the street. And hokey pokey is much the same as hocus pocus, which means a trick or a deception, jugglers, incantation, and so on. 2 marks. Well, before we start round two, I'm going to give each team a quotation, and they can write it down if they want to. And I want the 2 women members of the team to go on studying those quotations. And at the end of the program, I shall ask them where they come from. Not the women, but the quotations. Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is this one. I will return. And Nancy Spain with Dennis Norton, yours is, should old acquaintance be forgot? And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their idea of how these words came to be said or to be written. And I don't want any of the answers yet. And so we go on to round two. This is a round of court questions. The word court, C-O-U-R-T, is used in a number of ways, and I want for 2 marks to know what the following things are. Beginning with Dillis Powell, what is a court cupboard?
It's a piece of furniture.
Well, that's fair, yes.
It's a cupboard you court in, hence cupboard love.
cupboard love, which isn't very appropriate.
Drink.
2 marks. It's a movable cupboard or buffet to hold flagons, cans, cups, beakers, and so on. A sort of medieval cocktail cabinet. And you'll find it in Romeo and Juliet, if you care to look for it, in Act 1, Scene 5. Dennis Norton. Court plaster.
Oh, well, if you've ever put one of those... I mustn't mention the brand, but that kind of sticky plaster on your chest. When you take it off, you find it's caught on it. It's absolutely agonizing to get you scream. That is a caught plaster.
Well, you're right.
You, no doubt, have some different story, and jobation to match.
Dennis, you're right about, I think, one of the modern meanings can be a sticking plaster, the old kind that wasn't elastic. But originally, this was the plaster which the ladies at the court used to put patches on their face, which were supposed to be to make them more beautiful, but sometimes hid pimples and things like that. And they were cut into all sorts of different shapes and sizes, particularly when Queen Anne was not dead. One out of two. Nancy Spain. The court of pie powder.
Magpies?
No, not that kind of pie.
Well, it's obviously something like Cloud Cuckoo Land. Doesn't exist.
This is very real.
Well, you're kidding, Jack.
No, no.
I give in.
No, Mark, sorry. It was a court of justice who formerly had at all fairs and markets and presided over by the steward of the lord of the manor or the owner of tolls, which decided cases where there were disputes between buyers and sellers. In other words, it wasn't a sort of permanent court sitting. It only happened when there was a fair or a market. Nowadays, Petty Sessions does the same job. Not, I'm afraid. Frank Muir, the court of love.
You get this in ballads.
Yes.
It's when a lady has two lovers or vice versa.
Yes.
And this court of love decides, who's got priority.
That's it. And about sort of what date, very roughly, Frank?
About February the 8th. the 12th century.
That'll do. A little later. Yes, that's about right. It was a judicial court for deciding affairs of the heart, and it was established, first of all, in southern France, in Provence, as Frank quite rightly says, during the days of the troubadours, in round about the 11th to 13th centuries. A lady who was listening to one admirer, squeezing the hand of another, and touching with her toe the foot of the third, and the court had to decide which of those favoured three was the sort of top chap. Two marks. Well, the next round is origins and derivations, and three marks if you get the best possible answer. Dillispaugh, the origin of the phrase to out Herod Herod.
It's from Hamlet.
It comes in Hamlet, yes.
Mm. And it's in the Hamlet's speech to the players.
Yes.
When he's telling them to speak the speech trippingly on the tongue.
Yes.
And not to sort of spit the groundlings or
yes.
anything of that sort.
Right, right. But the phrase was being used by Shakespeare in a metaphorical sense. And what was he referring to?
Massacre the innocents.
It means, in the quotation from Hamlet, which Dillis quite rightly mentioned, an actor who was not to talk and shout too loud to split the ears of the groundlings, it out Herod's Herod. But the point is that you are supposed not to outdo the infamous King Herod in your ranting and roaring, or probably in your wickedness as well. He did massacre the innocents, but in the medieval mystery plays, he was always on as a shouting, ranting, roaring character, and that's why Shakespeare, and through Hamlet, mentions him as the kind of player he didn't want his actors to be. All right, Dennis Norden. Why do people whose surname is Clark usually get the nickname Nobby?
Was an admiral.
Yes, there was an admiral, Clark, who was, frankly, Nobby. It was because he used to keep
Phineas.
No, he used to keep his telescope tucked inside his jacket. And that does make a man look, doesn't it?
He had a flag lieutenant called Big Ear.
That's right, Nobby, and the flag lieutenant was called Big Ear.
It's a lovely story, Dennis. The pity is it isn't true. And I can't give any marks for it. Now, this began in the army, but the reason behind the nickname comes from further back still. Originally, clerks, black-coated workers, thought themselves pretty fair cut above the manual workers and dressed accordingly, rather smartly. In other words, they looked like Nobs or Nobby, and so any clerk became Nobby Clark, and later on anybody with a surname Clark in army parlance became Nobby as well. Nancy Spain, origin of the phrase italics.
Well, you write a fine italic hand.
Yes.
You slant to the right, thus giving the type face, a bit of movement.
Yes.
which is known as putting the thing into italics.
Yeah. It slopes from bottom
left... From left to right.
Bottom left to top right. Yes.
Bottom left to top right, yes.
Yes, that's fair
yes,
enough.
Indeed.
That's what
right.
It is
never
now.
Never known a typeface that sloped from bottom right to top left.
Well, I write rather like that myself, but I'm not in type.
I may say so, Jack. That's rather warped.
Bent rather than warped, I think.
Bent, if you wish.
I'm going to give you 1.5 for knowing, which is not terribly hard, what italic type looks like. Sloping from bottom left to top right, used usually in English writing for emphasis.
Pope never used it. He said a little leaning is a dangerous thing.
Oh, dear. Well, this was, in fact, a Roman or Italian type. It was first used by an Italian, Aldo Minucius, in the 16th century in an edition of Virgil. And he dedicated this edition of Virgil to Italy, and therefore the name of the sloping type in which he put it was called Italic. And it was supposed to have been based on the very beautiful handwriting of Petrarch the poet. 1.5, I think. Frank Muir, the phrase, and I want its origin, to peach on someone. P-E-A-C-H. To peach on someone.
Peach, it means to shop them, to yes. Grass on them.
Yes?
Your information is lodged against you, which you have to answer. Yeah. Open court.
All right, I think that'll round
up. Not in the court cupboard, no.
I think that's near enough. They're rather roundabout. 3 marks. Means to inform on someone, but it comes from the perfectly correct dictionary word, impeach, as Frank rightly says, meaning to accuse someone of a felony or of treason, and so by abbreviation and slang, it's used by crooks for grassing or informing. Well, now we come to the who, why, what, and where department in the next round. Dennis Powell first. I want to know who was the parson at the burial of Cock Robin?
Crow. Rook.
I'll give you the marks if you'll quote the rhyme.
I said the rook.
Yes?
With my little book.
2 marks. The parson at the burial of Cock Robin was I said the rook with my little book, I'll be the parson. Dennis Norden. Ring a roses, a pocket full of posies, ashoo, ashoo, we all fall down. This children's nursery game was supposed to have originated at the time of a great national disaster. What was the disaster, and in what way, in that rhyme, was it linked with the disaster?
Television.
It's the Great Plague.
Yes.
They used to carry posies whenever yes. there was a plague because of what they used to call the miasma.
Yes.
Miasma.
Quite right.
What else? Ring a roses, pocket full of posies. Ashu, ashu.
Spots, you know.
Is a sneeze.
Yes.
We all fall down. It's a terribly sick nursery rhyme, this actually.
You're absolutely dead right, Dennis. Yeah. You get 3 marks. It was, as you say, a rather sick, in every sense, nursery rhyme. Children sang this first at the time of the Great Plague in 1665, I think it was. The rose was the plague spot. The posies, as Dennis says, are the flowers you carry to fend off the terrible stench and to save yourself from the plague. Ashu was the sneeze, which was more or less the final stage. And all fall down doesn't need any explaining at all. All right, Nancy Spain. What poet wrote what poem about a naval action at Flores in the Azores, and who was the hero of it?
Well, it depends, Jack. At Flores in the Azores, Sir Richard Grenville lay.
Yes.
Tennyson wrote it.
And about Sir Richard Grenville.
About Sir Richard Grenville, it's called The Revenge.
Quite right. 3 marks it is. Tennyson's The Revenge, Sir Richard Grenville, the hero, 3 marks. Frank Muir, this is more complicated. A certain poet wrote about a certain lady whom he obviously cared for, rather more than somewhat, because he wrote about her feet, her clothes, her voice, and even said he'd like to kiss her leg because it was as white and hairless as an egg.
Fain would I kiss her lovely leg as white and hairless as an egg. It's the first time that a lady's limb has been lionized by a poet. It's the Reverend Herrick.
Yes?
Or Little by Little.
I want the lady's name, too.
Julia. We think Julia.
You do think right, Clay, and you get your 3 marks. And so we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier on the programme. First of all, Dilys Powell, for 2 marks, can you give me the origin of your quotation, "I will return"?
An American military gentleman of the last war.
Yes.
And it's MacArthur.
Yes, quite right. General Douglas MacArthur, leaving the fortress of Corregidor in the Philippines when he was on the point of capture by the Japanese on, I believe, the 11th of March, 1942, said, "I will return," and made good his word several years later. 2 marks. Now, Nancy Spain, the origin of your quotation, which was, "Should old acquaintance be forgot?"
Robert Burns, yes, who wrote the song "Auld Lang Syne," was based on another thing by another man.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, I'll settle for Robert Burns and his poem,
right,
"Auld Lang Syne," which is good enough. 2 marks for Robert Burns, "Auld Lang Syne."
Well, that's fine.
And now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these two quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the larger and longer amount of applause from the audience here in the studio. So back to Frank Muir, whose quotation was, "I will return."
People often come up to me in the street and say, "To what do you owe your fantastic social success?" "Why are you such an immensely popular person?" But you know, I wasn't always. Once I was like you. Shy and embarrassed, not very good with other people. So I thought, why is that? Now, what is it that intrigues people? And I thought, what intrigues people really is knowledge. Is a well-read person, a well-informed person, is an interesting person. Now, once I'd formulated this, I decided to act upon it. So at once, I decided to learn about everything. So I shut myself up for 8 or 9 days and just learnt about the world and history. I didn't even sleep, you know, except at night. During the whole of that time, I ate nothing but food. But at the end of it, I knew almost everything about almost everything. You exhibit dubiety. This is quite true. I do. I know a tremendous amount. If you don't believe me, I'll give you an example of one of the things I learned and know. How many of you here know that there are 2,847 feathers on the average hen? But I know, so I am never tongue-tied. I'll tell you some more things I know. Do you know that 27 halfpennies arranged in a pile are the exact height of a 60-watt bulb on its side? I'll tell you another thing. Do you know that you have to be very careful when you pick up a duck-billed platypus because it has a very sharp hook behind its left leg? These are facts. I am not making these up. These are truths. I'll tell you something else. Did you know that a black beetle isn't a black beetle, but a ladybird is? A black beetle is actually a non-jumping cricket. I'll tell you another thing. Do you know that in 1747, the novelist Henry Fielding's wife broke her nose falling out of a coach and four? I'll tell you something. Do you know that a goldfish hasn't got a nose? That it smells over the entire area of its skin? Do you know that in 1942, the state of Wyoming produced 1/8 of a pound of dried beans per head of the population? Ladies and gentlemen, these facts can be at your disposal. I have published them all in an encyclopedia, which I call the Encyclopedia of Rare Knowledge, ERN. Urn, I call it. Now, you buy Urn, purchase Urn, and in 7 days, you too can have a repartee like mine. So all you tongue-tied people here tonight and listening, don't be tongue-tied. Make a vow now as you will do this thing. Promise yourselves, not only yourselves like General MacArthur, the world, I will read Urn.
Well, I hope you've got all those bits of useless knowledge down. I have. Then we go on to Dennis Norden, and if you remember, his quotation was, "Should old acquaintance be forgot?"
You know, one of the things that the BBC is most sensitive about is when they hear or see anybody refer to them as anti-BBC. And indeed, in the last few months, they made a determined effort to change this brand image. They issued a memo, as they call it, a directive, to everybody concerned with programs, that in future, all programs must be hard-hitting, satiric, contemporary, and savage. Now, the program to be most dismayed by receipt of this memo was Listen with Mother. So they did something about it. They sent a man to put it right. The man was a young, voluble, fiery Welshman from a red brick university who had been sent to remedy Listen with Mother. The hour produced the man, or the quarter of an hour produced, etc. He came in, and from the moment he came in, all was turmoil. He snatched up the scripts. He said, "This junk, man," he said, "this junk, this pup, we're not putting this out, man. Look at it, look," and he read the script. "Wee Willie Magpie, Tommy Titmouse gets a surprise, a song of two twiddly worms." He says, "Is this today? Is this in this whirlpool that we live in? Is this for the children?" And the lady who looks after Listen with Mother, who's a little round woman with a face that's positively haggard with motherliness, she said, You must appreciate that our listeners are tiny little ones lying in their cots. He said, "This is what we play them tomorrow." And he gave her this LP, this long-playing record, which she looked at, and as she saw the title, her eyebrows shot up practically the middle of her center parting. The title was Pagan Ritual Dances of the Dyak Headhunters. She said, "But this is for tiny little infants in their cots. Won't they be frightened?" He said, "The only thing we have to be afraid of is being scared itself," he said, "and the sooner we teach them that, we cannot teach them too early." She said, "Well, I don't know about too early, but it must be 1:45. So, 1:45, the next day, the voice came on, "Hello, are you sitting comfortably? Here is Daphne. She has a record for you. The old rain dance of the Dyak Headhunters." And then this came on. The thudding of the tom-toms. The hoarse, barbaric shouts. The blood-crazed yelps. The screaming of a female being dragged off into the jungle. For 15 minutes this went on, and it had its impact. The next day, there wasn't an infant welfare clinic that didn't have a house full notice outside. You couldn't get gripe water for love or money. Every cot in the land contained a tiny, twitching, screaming hysteric. The papers blazoned forth its doubts about this scheme. The young Welshman was sent for by the BBC Board of Governors and congratulated. After all, he said modestly, what is broadcasting for if it's not controversial? And proudly, he exhibited the headline from the newspaper, which questioned his wisdom, which dared to question his wisdom. The headline which read, should old Dyack rain dance be for cot?
Oh dear, you make it so difficult. Two such different stories. I think I'm going to make that a tie. I think the amount of applause is about the same for both of them, so that's one mark each. And that brings us to a final score in which Dennis Powell and Frank Muir get home by 3 marks from Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden. And it also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dennis Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.